Fireflies Unite with Kia, your weekly podcast from the perspective of individuals thriving with a mental illness. We are normalizing the conversation about mental health within communities of color to foster mental wellness and empowerment. Monday, Fireflies, and welcome to another episode of the Fireflies Unite podcast with me, Kia, where our mission is to bring light into darkness, just like the firefly, by sharing the stories of those thriving with a mental illness within communities of color. I hope that everyone is doing well and that you had a fantastic weekend. And I have to say, happy Mental Health Awareness Month. So it is May, and May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and I'm super excited about this month because I have some great projects that are in the works. I'm a part of some great opportunities that is really pushing the mental health conversation forward, and it just feels really good to be on the other side. And by the other side, I mean how I was in such a very dark place and, you know, been in recovery from my suicide attempt, and I'm just doing so well and advocating and working with mental health organizations, and the work that I have been doing has truly been helping me in my recovery. Some people think that if a person constantly talks about their mental health journey with whatever what mental illness they may experience, that it may bring up old feelings or allow them to go through or experience that those dark moments again. But for me, that hasn't been the case. I have been finding liberty and freedom in sharing my story because it was making me carry so much weight by trying to hide it. Most people know that when I started writing articles, I was writing under an alias name, and it takes too much energy to try to hide something because that means that I can't be there's a part of me that I'm hiding. I can't be all of myself. And for me, I said that for people in my circle, if they want to be a part of my life, they have to accept all of me. You can't pick and choose what pieces of me you want to accept. And so my mental illness happens to be a part of me. While it does not define me, it's not a character flaw, but it is a part of my story. And so once I started to own that, I found that the stigma and the shame that I had when it came to my experience, it went away. Like, I'm in a space in my life where I've worked through a lot of trauma. I worked through a lot of issues in therapy. And now it's just, I have a thing where I just don't care who knows. If you know about my story, then great. If it inspires you, great. I just, you know, if someone judges me based on my experience, then that's their issue. That's not mine. I'm not taking on someone's issue because of their ignorance when it comes to mental health and mental illness. And so that's exactly why I'm doing the podcast. That's why I speak at these events, and that's why I write these articles, because I want to educate people, because the more that we educate people on what mental illness is and what mental health is, then it will really start to dismantle those stigmas and help people understand what it is and what it is not. And so before we even get into the topic for today, y'all, I have a few things on my list that we got to go through, okay? Has anyone listened to J. Cole's album? Like, y'all, I was never really a rap fan, let me just tell y'all that, okay? I do enjoy listening to socially conscious rap. So rap that has a meaning to it. Rap that can shift the things, the way that society looks at things. Rap that can make an impact and really impact the culture. All right, y'all. So there's this song by J. Cole, and it's called Friends. And I actually wanted to talk about the song. So actually, a portion of the lyrics that I wanted to read off. And J. Cole, let's see. So basically, J. Cole is talking about racism. He's talking about systematic oppression and how it impacts African Americans. And then he goes into in this particular verse where he's talking about saying how every black boy want to be a basketball player, but there are only 12 slots on the Pistons. And then when he gets to the particular part where he's talking about mental health, he says there's all sorts of trauma from drama that children see. The type of, I'm not going to say the curse, the type of SHIT that normally would call for therapy, but you know just how it go in our community. Keep that SHIT inside. It don't matter how hard it be. Fast forward, them kids is grown and they blowing trees and popping pills due to chronic anxiety. When I listened to that, it just brought up so much for me because it goes to show how in the African American community, we think therapy is for crazy people. And while we have certainly gotten much better and more blacks are in therapy, but there is still this stigma and so many people who won't go to therapy and get the help that they need. And I thought it was really great that J. Cole used his platform to talk about mental health. And he says, you know, when he says, keep that blank inside, no matter how hard it be. And it's like, we go through all of these things in life and we just let it build and we let it fester. Now, that's not to say that every single person who's smoking marijuana, that they have a mental illness or that they are doing it because of some type of negative reason or because something's going on in their life. But there has been a correlation when people are struggling with the mental illness or really struggling mentally and emotionally that they turn to drugs. And so when he says the trauma that kids see in their life, and you fast forward when they grow up, they're out here smoking trees. And I thought that was really important that he said that, because there are so many instances where people just think, oh, I'm just smoking weed because it helps me to relax. And that may be the case. It may help some people relax. I'm not against weed. I'm not saying that it doesn't help people, because I know there has been studies and science to prove that that is the case. But there's also a very fine line when you think about people who experience trauma. And when you experience trauma, it alters the way, it alters the chemicals in your brain. And so when the chemicals in your brain are altered, a lot of times you suppress those memories, and there are things that happen in your life that sometimes trigger those emotions or those images or that trauma that you've suppressed. And as a result, when you don't know how to deal with certain things, you may turn to, or people may turn to, drugs and alcohol. And so for J. Cole to be a very high profile rapper and have a huge fan base, I thought it was really great that he used his platform to talk about mental health. So shout out to J. Cole for really just out here doing it for the culture and shedding light on mental illness. Another thing that I wanted to talk about is great, because the black men, we're going to briefly talk about black men before we get into the topic. And so I also wanted to give a shout out to Charlamagne. Charlamagne the guy, a lot of us know him from The Breakfast Club. He's one of the co-hosts on the show. And The Breakfast Club is a syndicated show and is based out of New York. And Charlamagne could be really controversial for the things that he says. He gives his opinion pretty much. He says what he wants about anything, whether someone likes it or not. He doesn't care, and he is who he is. But I mean, I've had some mixed feelings about Charlamagne about certain things, but what I can say is that what I respect about him is him living in his truth of what his truth is. I read his book, Black Privilege, Opportunity Comes to Those Who Create It. That's a great, great book. But what I really want to talk about is Charlamagne did an interview on MSNBC, and he talked about therapy. He talked about how he goes to therapy, and one of the things that he said was, I wonder, who does my therapist go to? Like, who does the go-to person go to? And that really stood out, because those of us who are often the go-to people that everyone leans on for advice, for encouragement, whatever resources that we may have available, a lot of times we can find ourselves getting empty. We find ourselves running low on E. We're depleted because we're constantly giving and we're never refilling our cup. And so, based on the scripture, we talk about the scripture, my cup runneth over. And I often use the quote, which is something that was shared with me in church, is that what's in my cup is for me and what runs over is from everyone else. You cannot give from an empty cup. Like, we're sitting here running around, you know, whether you're a parent, whether you're a student, neglecting our mental health, but yet still trying to help people. And that was something that I was doing before my diagnoses. I was always trying to help everybody. And as I put it, I would say I was so busy trying to save the world that I couldn't even save myself. So before you put yourself out there in a position where you are trying to save the world and go after your dreams and be this rock star and this boss or all those things, make sure that you clean up what's on the inside. Make sure that your the brain is an organ. And just like, you know, your heart needs nourishment and you need food in your body to be nourished, you know, your brain needs to be nourished. And one of the ways that you nourish your brain is with therapy, you know. And so when Charlamagne said that, who does the go-to person go to, it really stood out to me, because a lot of times we're always wanting to help everyone else. And sometimes I found in my case that I was doing a lot because it was a unhealthy coping strategy, so I wouldn't have to deal. It's not that my heart wasn't in the right place, because I genuinely enjoy helping people out of the kindness of my heart. And there are many times where I don't expect anything in return. That's just who I am. I believe that God placed me on this earth to serve people and to make an impact through my experience. And I think that it really worked against me because I had so many things that I did not work through, and still trying to help people, it was just counterproductive to my mental health. And so I thought it was really important to say this. If you are the go-to person, make sure you, as the go-to person, has someone that you go to as well. So shout out to Charlamagne. So again, make sure if you're the go-to person, you make sure you have someone to go to. And so I thought that was really important. Now, y'all, we're going to save this particular topic. This is something that has been really controversial over the past few weeks. All right, y'all. So we're about to talk about Mr. West. And by Mr. West, I'm talking about Kanye West. So we see, unless you've been living under a rock, then that means that you probably wouldn't know this, but Kanye West is getting a lot of backlash, rightfully so, for saying that slavery was a choice. And there was, honestly, when I was watching this unfold and I was really scrolling past it on my timeline on Twitter, like, I didn't want to see it. Just because there are certain things that can be triggering for me. And in order for me to protect my mental health, as active as I am on social media, like I said, I always have to take breaks from it. But when I am on it, I don't click on everything if it could be potentially triggering. I just kind of read the headline and scroll through it. But one of my friends texted me and was like, I just can't get over what's going on with Kanye. This is really sad. So I was like, okay, let me just see what's going on. So I wound up watching the full interview about Kanye West, and given that it's Mental Health Month, I believe it's a perfect time to address Kanye West's behavior. So for the last few weeks, Kanye has constantly been in the media for his provocative tweets. He was seen wearing a Make America Great Again hat and confessing his support for Trump. Now, everyone has their own opinion and their views as it pertains to their political party, but what I will say is that a lot of people feel as though Kanye West is betraying the culture, and the culture as in the black people, black culture, because we were the ones that were supporting him from the very beginning, back in his college dropout days and in his early career. And so people were confronting him and saying that, you know, you're just wrong for what you're saying. And I do believe that Kanye is wrong, and he should have consequences for his behaviors. But I really wanted people to look at it looking at it from all angles, because before I formulated my opinion, I wanted to make sure that I watched the interview first and then formulated my opinion. There were so many things happening on Twitter. Like, some people were laughing and some people were angry. It was just so much going on, which could be very overwhelming. Kanye said that he was addicted to opioids that the doctors prescribed him after he received liposuction. And so he really stirred up, like I said, some controversy for his comments about, he said, when you hear about slavery for 400 years, for 400 years, he said that was a choice. And everybody's like, hold up. Now, no, slavery was not a choice. Slavery was forced upon us. And so I do not agree with Kanye, because the fact of the matter is that my ancestors were taken against their will from the continent of Africa, stripped of their culture, and forced to take on a new identity. We were treated like animals. Their children were taken away from their mothers, and families just were separated, and so many lives were lost. And I know that because there's a direct correlation between generational trauma and poverty because of slavery, that whether you realize it or not, we're still dealing with the effects, the aftermath, if you will, of slavery. So therefore, I do not agree with Kanye's statement. But there was a TMZ employee, his name is Van Lathan, and he confronted Kanye and he said, while you are making music and being an artist and living the life that you earn by being a genius, the rest of us in society have to deal with these threats to our lives. We have to deal with the marginalization that comes from the 400 years of slavery that you said for our people was a choice. Frankly, I'm disappointed, I'm appalled, and brother, I'm unbelievably hurt by the fact that you have morphed into something to me that's not real. And he checked Kanye, okay? He checked Kanye, and his words could not have been more accurate. And I thought that someone needed to check him. But when I was watching the interview, here's the other thing to it. When I was watching the interview, there were statements that Kanye was making, right? So Kanye was making these, he was just, seemed to be unclear. Like, it appeared as if he was having a difficult time conveying his thoughts in a cohesive manner. He seemed a bit, this is just Takiya's opinion, he seemed like disassociated, like he just didn't seem fully present mentally. And yes, I know Kanye thrives on attention. Yes, we know that Kanye he can be ignorant and arrogant. I'm not taking that away from who he presents himself to be before all of us. But what I am saying is that he just didn't seem right to me. And I brought this question up to various therapists on Twitter. Some therapists were saying that he shouldn't be, you know, he shouldn't be excused for his behaviors. We need to make sure that, you know, we're holding him accountable. It doesn't appear that he has a mental illness, while there were other therapists that said that he could possibly be showing signs. But the fact of the matter is, we can't fully confirm that just because we don't have Kanye West's medical records. We don't have all that information. However, while it has not been confirmed that he's living with a mental illness, it is important to note that in November of 2016, Kanye was hospitalized for mental health issues and ended his tour early. And that was according to TMZ. And apparently, also according to TMZ, for issues with his medication, which is psychotropic medication. And psychotropic medication is medication given for people who have mental health issues, mental health diagnoses. His mental health issues were triggered by the anniversary of his mother's death and with issues taking his medication. And that's all according to TMZ. So it's important that we use this situation that what's going on with Kanye as it pertains to mental health, that in the African American community, and address how trauma alters the chemistry in your brain, and it can increase the likelihood of someone developing a mental illness. Kanye's actions could very well be due to the trauma of losing his mother or having issues with his medication. But the point is, we don't know for sure, so we can't say that because, again, we don't have his records. I'm not a mental health professional, but this is just based on my observation. Just because there were so many people saying, like, oh, I have a friend who has bipolar disorder and my friend doesn't act like that, and this, and I'm like, just because you or someone you know did not respond the way Kanye responded to the death of his mother, or you may have responded to a death of a loved one, or your friend with a mental illness does not act the same way, it does not mean that his response to trauma is abnormal. mental illness is not one size fit all. Like, that's what we have to understand. It looks different on every single person. And again, like I said, rightfully so, people in our community, in the Black community, should be angry. You know, but for me, as someone who survived suicide and currently battles with a chronic mental illness, there's only but so much that I could find funny when I was looking at the memes and the things that people were saying. This situation, as Bernice King said, it does walk a very thin line between humorous and sad. There was some point where I was like, okay, I can see how that could be funny, and I, you know, laughed. But then there were other parts that was like, I was getting sad and I was just getting a little triggered, because I was like, I have people in my circle who have an array of mental health challenges or mental health diagnoses, and their behaviors can be bizarre at times, or what we would say is abnormal. Kanye is, again, to me, like I say, I know that he can be ignorant and arrogant, and some people may not give him any mercy, but y'all know the emoji, the okay emoji. Y'all can't see me because I'm recording, but if I had a video, y'all be able to see. But you know the okay emoji, I have about that much grace or that for him, because of the simple fact that there's a small amount of hope that I'm giving him, or grace I should say, that I'm giving him, because to me he does appear to be in some type of a mental distress. Everyone doesn't agree. Now, I'm not saying people were saying, you know, that we're using mental illness as a choice, I mean, basically as an excuse, and he doesn't have any mental illness, but at the end of the day, no one really knows. But I think the bigger thing for me is highlighting that there could be something going on, and before we start to just go off and attack, you know, we should look at it from all angles. And so, but this is not the first time where there was an uproar on Twitter when a Black man, or just really signs of, when it came to social media, showed signs of being mentally stable. There was the Tyrese challenge that went viral, and I was really upset that people in my community, the Black community, were laughing at someone in severe mental distress and thinking that it was funny and turning it into a challenge. Like, that's the issue now. That's why people don't come out when they're dealing with the mental health issue. That's why they wind up dying by suicide, and that's why they suffer in silence, because sometimes we can be so judgmental. We think that because it's not our experience that it can't be someone else's experience, and that's what is, it is important to note that everyone responds to things very differently. And while I do not agree with Tyrese's choice to post the video and put all his business out there, or I don't support him as an alleged abuser, let me put that out there. And I will also reiterate again that I do not agree with Kanye's statement. However, these examples highlight the complexity of mental illness and why many of us, and how many of us are just quick to think that something is funny. And I can understand, like I said, people being upset, but I think I got my feathers were ruffled a bit because people were like laughing and making jokes. And like I said, it's just me. I truly do believe that there's more going on to the surface when it comes to Kanye. That TMZ interview quickly went viral, and it turned into, on Twitter, if slavery were a choice, and it was trending, and for like 2 or 3 days. There were tweets, like I said, there were jokes. Other people stated we're giving him a pass, using mental illness as an excuse, that he needs to be held accountable for his actions. Yes, he does. There's certainly some truth to those statements saying that maybe we're giving him a pass when it comes to mental illness. But the thing is, like I said, when it comes to mental illness, there's no one look. It can range from people who are highly functional, like myself, now I am, but when I was in my episode, I was not highly functional, to those who cannot function without the help of someone else. So in particular, in the African-American community, some of us think that mental illness is not even real. Others think we could just pray it away, or we limit it to people who just talk to themselves. And I wrote this article, and I'll be sure to leave it in the show notes, based on, this was just my observation. I didn't disagree with anyone was saying, but what I did want people to do was open their minds up and look at things from different angles. not just look at it in this one narrow way of thinking. And so, you know, like I said, mental illness impacts a person's behaviors and thoughts. And if, you know, if you want to cancel Kanye and remove his black card, by all means, do you, boo-boo. That's your choice. I don't judge anyone. I think that, you know, we are all entitled to our opinion. And, you know, just like the TMZ employee van checked him, Kanye should have been checked. But even if you watch the video, Kanye like went up to him after him and was like apologizing. But as he was like walking toward him, his face like, y'all, he just don't seem all the way there. Like there, I mean, mentally, like he just don't seem all the way here, like present. And so, like I said, we should not accept his ignorant comment about slavery. No, we should not. But attacking him and making fun of him, y'all, it doesn't really help. I think there's a certain way that we can address things. But at the same time, if Kanye is being Kanye and being ignorant and arrogant, can you actually really address someone who doesn't want to be addressed? There was someone mentioned to me that, I don't know if this is true or not, about Charlamagne actually asking Kanye about therapy in an interview, and Kanye dismissed it when Charlamagne asked him. And if that's the case, then that would mean that maybe he doesn't think that he has any challenges, or he doesn't believe in therapy, or whatever it is. There's a lot of speculation and no one has the hard facts. But the reason why I wanted to talk about this is because, one, is Mental Health Awareness Month, and two, I just really want us to stop taking things for face value. Don't look at a tweet and then formulate an opinion. Don't look at a clip of a 15-second clip of a 3-minute interview and formulate your opinion. Like, I guess that's me being a communications professional and digging and doing research and making sure that I have to fact check things. Before you formulate any opinion, make sure you have as much knowledge as possible, and then, you know, formulate your opinion. But, you know, it's when we do things like that, make fun of people or attack them, and it's just not, I'm just not saying in terms of Kanye, but for someone who may be battling with a mental illness and they may be behaving bizarre to us, it's sometimes just those very actions that send people over the edge and into a crisis. And so I mainly just wrote the article because I just wanted us to see things in a different way. And I just wanted, and I thought it was very important to discuss it on the podcast. And so I'm interested in knowing your, you know, y'all thoughts. Join the Fireflies Unite Healthy Minds group. I posted the article in there and you can let me know what your thoughts are. I posted it on Twitter as well, and I also posted it on my website, fireflyesunite.com. And I'm just interested in knowing y'all thoughts on, you know, what y'all, you know, what you think. I don't mind having a respectful discussion, but, you know, what I will not tolerate is someone, you know, telling me I'm wrong for my thoughts, or like, it's just a matter of just having a discussion. That's the point of raising awareness for mental health. We have to be open to other people's truths, to their way of thinking, their, you know, their behaviors, their actions. Like, we just have to be open. And that doesn't necessarily mean you have to agree or you have to accept it, but it is good to just really open your mind. And so I always try to come from the place of not judging people. I always try to come from the place of operating in grace and love, and really being understanding, even if I don't agree with the person. And so, yeah, I'm interested in knowing what you guys have to say about that. So shout out to Charlamagne again for talking about going to therapy, and maybe that will encourage more black men to go to therapy. Shout out to J. Cole for bringing mental illness to light in his album. So for this particular episode, I'm actually looking for you guys to actually listen to the interview with Jessica, because Jessica is biracial. She is Asian and black. And with this podcast being for people of color, it is very important to see not just how black people, as we are one aspect for people of color, to see how other cultures that are of color deal with mental health. On today's episode, so we're going to actually have an interview with Jessica Gaddy. Jessica Gaddy is a licensed social worker. She is a minority mental health advocate, and she has over 10 years of mental health experience through her education, her professional employment, and lived experiences. From 15 years old, Jessica battled with major depressive disorder. In search of understanding what that experience was like, Jessica studied psychology and human behavior, and she also earned a master's degree in social work. And so she is also the founder of Nia Noir, a mental health support organization for women of color to educate, empower, and support one another through their mental health journey. Jessica, she passionately believes in the power of vulnerability and the strength of community. And using these two tenets as the foundation of Nia Noir, Jessica, her amazing work with Nia Noir has been featured in prominent news outlets such as the Huffington Post. And so Jessica, her hope is really that one day mental health will be a household conversation and that psychotherapy will be a standard regimen to healthcare practices. But until then, she's working tirelessly to encourage others that it's okay to not be okay. And so Fireflies, let's welcome Jessica Gaddy. Welcome, Jessica, to the podcast. I'm super, super excited to have you. How are you today?
I'm doing wonderful. So much for having me.
Of course, I had to get you on the podcast. I was like stalking you for a little while. You probably don't know that, because I watched like a video that you did, and I was learning out about your story. And this was like even before I launched the podcast or was doing anything with the podcast. But I knew about Nia Noir before even like finding out the person behind it. And once I started getting into more mental health, I was like, I have to get her on the podcast, you know, just because the mission of the podcast is really to normalize the mental health conversation within communities of color by sharing the stories of people who battle with mental illness. And I know that not only that you're a therapist, you also battle with a mental illness and also are biracial, which is a lot to dive into. So I'm super excited to talk to you because it's about to get really good.
Well, thank you for having me. And I'm so glad to hear that, you know, I've impacted you in some way before we've officially met. So I'm so excited for the opportunity to chat with you.
Yeah, so let's get the show on the road. So just wondering, like many households, mental illness is not something that's really talked about. And I take it that mental illness was not something that wasn't talked about as a child for you, because I know that you were a child. I remember watching this video and you sharing how you would sleep with your dad's medication inside a Ziploc bag and with like wine in the closet. Can you talk about your mental health journey and about that experience?
Oh man, that just dug up some memories I thought I buried, but yeah, that happened when I was 15. So throughout my childhood, I kind of thought these feelings of sadness and these lows were kind of normal because I watched my dad go through it. I've watched my mom go through it. And to me and my family, that was just kind of the norm. It was normal to not really be happy. And so when I was about 15 years old, I was in an emotionally and mentally abusive relationship with this guy that I was dating in high school. And when my parents found out about that relationship, it just created so much more turmoil. So they didn't know what I was dealing with within the relationship. And then their views of it just, you know, kind of escalated and turned into this enormous issue that I was dealing with at such a young age. And so I wanted to find an out. I just felt like, you know, not living at all was better than having to deal with what I was currently, you know, encountered with at such a young age. And so my dad and my parents used to have this medicine cabinet in the kitchen because my dad is on a lot of different medications. And so one night I just went into the kitchen and I kind of took a little bit of everything so that they wouldn't notice, and I put it in a Ziploc bag, and probably for about a month I slept with it under my pillow, and I just thought, you know, one day will be the right day. And then when it just gets a little too hard, then I'll just, you know, I'll figure out how to open this wine bottle and, you know, it'll be done. But thankfully, you know, kind of found God during that time. So yeah, I started going to church and I just felt like there was life that was so much bigger than me and so much more beyond what I was dealing with in that current moment. You know, I was talking to a couple of my friends and, you know, I told them like, I don't think I can make it. I don't think I can, you know, live this life any longer. And they kind of gave me an ultimatum, like, well, if you're not here, then we can't be friends anymore. And I just felt like that was so much bigger than, you know, what I was dealing with. So I don't know, long story short, like something just overcame me and I decided not to attempt suicide, but you know, whatever it was obviously saved my life. And so I definitely contribute it to my faith and my friends and my family that really helped me get through it during that time.
Wow. So when would you say was the first time that you started having thoughts of suicide?
I would say around that time when I was 15, and I will say that I saw my mom almost try to do it first, and I think that's kind of where like the idea sparked. And I was like, oh man, like even though she was stopped, this could be my way out. And so I would say around 15, I became pretty serious about it. But I can remember as far back as being like 7 or 8 and sitting in the closet, like holding a belt. And I was just like, I'm so over, like my parents were going through a lot in their marriage. And I just felt like there was nothing that I can do to help. And I just felt like maybe I was contributing to, you know, the stress of our family life. And I would say that was like my earliest memory, but it probably wasn't as serious and severe until I was about 15.
Yeah, that's deep, just being that young. And we hear recent stories about, you know, little girls and just boys, you know, of color who die by suicide, you know, Eight with Imani McRae, who died by suicide just last year in December before the new year came in. And then Ashante Davis, who was 10 years old in Colorado. And then I also had a cousin who was a boy. And you know, he died by suicide, and I'm like, we have to talk about it because clearly a lot of us are suffering in silence. And then when someone dies by suicide, we're like, so I didn't see it coming. What happened? Like, why would they want to do that? And then we start talking about it, then we start asking these questions. But if we have the conversation before it even gets to a crisis or it's too late and someone's dead, we can prevent a lot of lives from being lost. And I know that, so
Absolutely.
you're Asian and Black. So can you talk about being biracial and how that impacted your mental health from both sides, like having I know you're in your Asian culture and your Black culture. Like, what was that like growing up?
Well, it was a lot of suffering and silence. I think from both of my parents' perspective, I mean, mental health was multi-generational. So it wasn't anything that they really noticed and identified that stood out to say, hey, this is depression. Hey, this is bipolar disorder. Hey, this is XYZ. You know, the trauma that they dealt with during childhood and the trauma that their parents dealt with during childhood and I guess the trauma that I kind of dealt with during childhood was kind of normalized to us. And like I said earlier, you know, being unhappy was normal. Being unhappy was the standard. So when you kind of see that your parents are a certain way and their parents are a certain way and the people around them are a certain way, you really don't identify that something is wrong. And so it was just kind of the way that life is. You know, life is supposed to be hard and life is supposed to have struggles and, you know, it's not supposed to be easy. And so when I approached my parents for the first time, I believe I was 17, and I was still in this emotionally abusive relationship. And I finally told my parents, you know, like I've been in a relationship for about 5 years and, you know, it's hard. And my mom, I remember her saying, like, what can you possibly be going through at your age? And I just remember like that was so crushing to me because I felt like, one, I was finally opening up and sharing this, situation that I've been going through that has been creating so much turmoil for me and immediately getting shot down. So again, I'm like guarded and I don't want to talk about it and I'm scared about talking about it because I feel like, maybe this is normal. Maybe this isn't something I should complain about. Maybe this is just something I have to suck up and deal with. And so I would say from both sides equally, there was just like elusiveness about mental health. Like there wasn't really a name to it. And what's so funny is that my father was a psychiatric nurse. So he's always been in like this mental health arena, but he's seen more of the severe side of, schizophrenia and severe mental illnesses and working with criminals who have like, used guilty by reason of insanity and are in jail. So he's seen like the very severe side of mental illness, but I guess neglected, the everyday symptoms of depression and anxiety that was clearly like riddled in our entire family. So it was just like looking back, it was just a very interesting dynamic to see how engrossed we've been in mental health professionally, but neglected it in our own family and how much that has like exacerbated over the years. I would say now as an adult and being in the mental health field myself, I'm able to come to my parents and say, these were the things that I was dealing with, and this is how it affected me growing up, and this is what I have to do now to kind of undo all the damage. And I'm able to openly talk to my brothers and my sisters about the things that I've kind of dealt with growing up and how it impacted me. And we're able to say, like, yeah, I've experienced periods of depression, and yeah, I do have trauma because of the things that we've experienced growing up. But I think my parents are still a little guarded to that conversation because of their cultural background. They still don't want to admit that, something's wrong. They still feel like this is normal. But I guess I'm proud enough to say that my siblings and I have the awareness and the insight to kind of make the change and break the cycle in our own families. So that moving forward with our kids and our future kids, we can have the conversation of mental health and not kind of create this, continue the multi-generational cycles of trauma and depression and anxiety and mental illness.
Your dad's African American, right?
Yes, that's correct.
So did his side tell you like, you just need to pray, like pray about it?
So I've never actually been close to my dad's side of the family. They lived in the South and we were born and raised in California. So we've never really had a close relationship with them where I felt comfortable talking about what I was going through. But of course, growing up, the church was the cornerstone of our family. So there were times when, my dad would say, you just have to have faith, and by the grace of God, things will work out, and this, that, and the third. But in none of those conversations was, hey, let's go to the hospital and find you a psychiatrist, or hey, let's find you a therapist, or hey, let's find you someone that you can talk to. So I would say the first time that a therapist has entered our family was just recently when we had to force my father to seek therapy for his trauma. So, it was never really a conversation in our family to have someone outside of us come in and learn about what was going on. I would say that's another thing that came from our Asian culture was just that sense of privacy. And that's pretty common with Asian cultures. It's whatever's happening in our family stays within our family. And it's almost like a shame if there was anything negative happening in your family and anyone else knew about it. It was like you should be ashamed. You're, I guess, supposed to have this image of being pristine and perfect, but that's not reality. A lot of times we have to, fake smile and pretend like everything's okay and then go home and really be, down and depressed. But, to us on our Asian side, everything was kept so hush hush and so secret. And, it was really like wearing a facade for so many years.
Yeah, the irony in that is in the Black culture, we one of the things that people always say is like, what happens in this house stays in this house. You don't want anybody in your business. And it's something that is new to me. So I didn't know that the Asian culture also had a way of saying, like, no, you don't share what's going on in this house. Like, you keep it to the confine to the everyone in this house. And so I think
Absolutely.
that's where a lot of so that's where a lot of it starts, because now you say, like, okay, I don't have an outlet. I don't have anybody I can go to. And I, even for myself, like, I thought that only people who were mentally ill were like the people who walk down the street and talk to themselves. So I remember even being like, when I had my attempt, when I was in the hospital, and I had told like the social worker there, or I can't remember, it was a social worker or the director, but I remember saying to her, like, I don't belong here. Like this is a mistake. And she said, what do you mean you don't belong here? I said, because I have a bachelor's degree from Howard and a master's degree from Georgetown. So people like me don't, like, they don't come here. And she was like, people with degrees have breakdowns too. And it really starts to put things into perspective, like, not in that moment, because I was still very much so in denial about being about dealing with depression. Now, I kind of knew because I started doing research on my own, and given that I started struggling with thoughts of suicide at 14, and I never said anything to anyone. I just kept it to myself, suppressed, and then eventually, it's like a soda bottle and it explodes. But even with you being a therapist, was there some shame in you seeking treatment? Since you were like, I'm a therapist, like, I should have this all together. Like, was there any embarrassment for you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, oh my goodness, there was so much embarrassment and so much shame. I studied psychology in undergrad, so I kind of always knew about mental illnesses, very early on, and I was a peer wellness expert in undergrad. So I was educating people about mental health and about depression and about these different things. And when I got into grad school, I knew I wanted to obviously study social work. But I would say, like, I had really bad breakdowns in grad school, particularly. And for me, it was just so much shame in seeking therapy, because I'm like, how am I supposed to help other people when I don't even have my life together? Like, therapists are supposed to be the people that you go to for solace and for advice and for answers, and I can't even get my own life together. So for me, there was just like this huge cloud of embarrassment that's like, am I even in the right field? Like, should I be pursuing this? Like, I'm going to be the worst therapist ever. And that attributed more to my anxiety and my feelings of hopelessness and feelings of worthlessness, because I just felt like I'm in this program spending all this money for something that I don't even know how to manage myself. Like, how am I going to help people when I'm in the same situation? I remember the first time I went to a school psychologist, I kind of went to see if I can learn from her. That's how I framed it. I wanted to see if there was anything I can learn being in the field, when really I just wanted to learn more about myself. And she was kind of like, well, that's not what we do here. Like, I can't really help you in that way. So that kind of was discouraging for me. And then when I got into grad school and I was seeking counseling at the school psychologist, at the school counselor, the wait was like 3 months to see somebody. So I'm like, forget it. Like, I'm just discouraged again. Like, I just have to figure this out on my own. And I think that was for the first time I tried to seek a therapist through my primary care doctor. And both times my therapists were white, and I just could not connect with them. And so, again, I was just like in the cycle of discouragement, like, all hope is lost. No one can help me. I'm just supposed to help myself. And, maybe I'll use the tools that I learned from my education to be able to help me through this path. But it was just so, like, talking to my other, colleagues, and nobody else that I knew was going through therapy. So it was just kind of like, well, am I supposed to be in this field because I'm supposed to have it together? And I guess that's kind of where Nanowar started, because I just felt like I needed something. I needed a group. I needed some people that I can talk to about these issues without having to feel like I'm outed or I'm, ashamed and I'm kind of isolated by myself. So I feel like sometimes things are better as groups, and it's better to have that feeling of, yeah, I'm going through that too. And so that's how the Anora kind of started, was like out of desperation of something that I needed for myself, and I knew other people needed as well.
Look at that. You jumping right along to my question. I was going to ask what led to the birth, but I mean, you already jumped ahead. Yeah, I mean, we can stay there though, because I think that, what you're doing is really great, to provide that circle of support for a woman of color to have this conversation about mental health. So, can you actually share about or just talk about the workshops and what they entail, and like what do they look like and the goal of them? What do you hope to accomplish with them?
Sure. So the first one that we had was called our Anora Inner Circle. So we got about, I would say, maybe 30 to 40 people together. And it was mostly women of color. We had a few men, sprinkled throughout, but it was about 40 people, and we just came together to talk about mental health and like provide psychoeducation from the standpoint of a clinician. And I had my other clinician friends, Ms. Lenata Williams was there. I had a couple friends who had experiences with mental illness, either with themselves or with their family, so that they can speak on that as well. And we just provided some psychoeducation about what depression is, what bipolar is, postpartum depression, what that looks like, what are some symptoms you need to look out for, how do you help a family member who might be experiencing something, and just really facilitate the conversation of, this is my experience, this is how I got through it. This is how I can help someone else. And for a lot of people, it was just really eye-opening because they didn't know the warning signs as much as they thought they did. And for some others, it was like a completely fresh eye, like, wow, I didn't know any of this existed. For some people, they may have been going through the woes of depression, and so they just really needed that space to feel like they belonged somewhere. So it was just really powerful to see where different people were coming from and how this one workshop kind of brought everyone together. So we're hoping to do more of those in the future. We want to have them at least regularly, and eventually I'll get to a place where I can have them specific to different groups of people. So whether that's women who are dealing with depression, women who are dealing with postpartum depression, women who are dealing with trauma. And then I can have those different workshops for them as well. So that way they don't feel like, I'm sitting next to someone who has been through some severe trauma, and I am just going through, some work stress, some mild depression. Because that was some of the feedback that I got, that some women felt like they were on two different levels of their mental illness and they just couldn't relate. So I do want to be able to separate in that way, and so that people feel like they have more of a intimate setting in a, closer related group. So those are some of the things that we see in the outlook. And we still do some fun events every now and then. So we do happy hours, because drinking in moderation and socializing is always helpful for self-care. So we do those social events. We also focus on total wellness as well. So last year we hosted our first summer wellness tour, and that integrated physical fitness and mental health. So we did a 45 to 1 hour workout, and then we did a meditation to follow. And so that brought together, women from six different cities across the country. We were in LA, DC, New York, Baltimore, Richmond, and Philly. And so that was an amazing turnout. And we just want to focus on all aspects of wellness, because everything affects your mental health at the end of the day, whether it's your physical health affects your mental health, your financial health affects your mental health. Everything just kind of comes full circle, and we want to be able to highlight all of those dimensions of wellness and how they play a factor into your mental health.
Absolutely. What you're doing, it's so necessary. We need to feel like we have a safe place to go to I'm finally in a space now where I'm just very open about my experience. Well, I've always been, well, hold on, let me go back. I've always been very open about my experiences, except for that one little part of struggling with depression. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, it's a part of who I am, but it's not who I am. And I felt like I couldn't fully be who I am. Like, why is this one little part of me I can't expose because I'm fearful that someone's going to judge me. And so that's why I was like, no, I'm not doing that anymore. Like, I have to just say what my story is. And even one of my friends was like, what made you like come out? Like, I put come out in air quotes. She's like, because she opened up and said, like, yeah, I've actually been struggling with self-harm. She was like, but I would never tell anyone like about that. Like, I would just keep that like to myself or like, people within my close circle. Like, I wouldn't make myself like this public figure, if you will. And I was like, you know what? I get that. I'm not saying that everyone go out on social media and be like, hey, I have bipolar disorder. That's not what I'm saying. But for me, I have a communications background. So I thought, what better way of using my media and communication skills to raise awareness and start advocating because of not just my career experience, but my personal experience with mental health. And I thought it was a great way to merge all of that. And by having the conversation, and I guess, as she said, as some of my friends say, like, oh, you're famous. And I always put like the little emoji, like the emoji with like the fingers like this much. And so I've always told them like I'm this much famous. But no, I told them like, yeah, I have to talk about it. It's not a matter of like putting myself out there or doing it for fame or anything. It's really to help save people's lives. Like, if I could share my story with someone or give someone else the opportunity to share their story and it helps save someone's life, then I'm like, what type of better work can you do from
Absolutely.
helping someone from ending their life? That's huge because I just think about, if I was successful at my attempt, then I, wouldn't have even gotten the chance to start this journey and make an impact. And I always say that it's not also very liberating to share your story, but while you're sharing your story with someone else and it's impacting them, it's also like very healing and therapeutic for you.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that.
So when I just learned of your story, I was like, wow, I have a lot in common because one of the things is you talk about how you waited like 10 years to seek treatment. And, I also waited like I think it was like 11 or 12 years before I saw any treatment. And then also both, being a suicide survivor, how important, to anyone who's listening to the podcast, how important is it to immediately seek treatment opposed to waiting until you're in a crisis? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think early prevention is the best means of getting help. I think it's so critical to have mental health professionals in elementary schools and in preschools just to do like soft assessments to see where kids are at and how they're feeling. Because you don't know what kids are going through and you don't know what they're soaking in and what they're experiencing. And oftentimes we see is like kids are so innocent and they don't really go through much. But you have some kids that are raised in some really rough environments and are exposed to a lot of different types of traumas that is not normal for the normal, for the average 6, 7, or 8 year old. So early prevention is so incredibly necessary. But as we get older and we're able to kind of identify for ourselves through self-awareness that, something's not right. I don't feel happy. I don't feel adequate. I feel like, wanting to hurt myself. You need to talk to someone right away because the longer it tends to fester and feed, it's going to worsen and it's going to exacerbate. And as you start feeling those symptoms, other things in life are going to happen and are kind of going to throw stones at, this vulnerability that you already have. And it's just going to make it worse. And, it just takes one bad event on top of what you're already dealing with to push you over the edge, So I think as soon as you are identifying that you are dealing with something, you need to seek help, and you need to at least, at the very least, just have someone that you can feel safe and comfortable to talk to. And, hopefully that person can push you in the right direction to either say, hey, maybe you should talk to a professional, or maybe you just need to take a break from work for a little bit so that you can kind of decompress and focus on yourself. Or, you need to seek other means of self-care or coping. But if you're noticing that you want to hurt yourself, or you want to hurt someone else, or if someone has been hurting you, then you need to seek professional help immediately.
Yeah. And you know what? What I think about when we talk about seeking professional help immediately, something that tends to be, I think going back to what you said, that tends to be a bit discouraging is seeking treatment and sometimes like calling and not being able to get an appointment till like 4 months later. And at that point, when you're trying to do something that could be a preventative to you maybe actually attempting suicide. At this point, maybe you're just having the thoughts, but you haven't attempted. So I think that's, of course, where things have to change, within the healthcare system, because that can be discouraging, or you're calling and you're not getting anyone to answer, or then someone doesn't take your insurance. Like, it literally, like, you sometimes have to jump through a lot of hoops before actually getting into someone's chair. And the odds of getting into someone's chair who looks like you is extremely, that's even slimmer. It's hard.
Absolutely. Well, I completely agree with you. And I shared my experience of how discouraged I was from not being able to have access to timely healthcare and with someone that looked like me. And, being in the healthcare system now as a therapist, I understand and I see firsthand how challenging it is for people to get access to mental health care in a timely fashion, especially if you're, coming from a low income background. It is incredibly challenging. But that's not to say it's not impossible. It's a little bit harder, and I know the system is working on that. They're trying to, have things that are more accessible and at least have emergency access available. But I guess to say to anyone listening to the podcast, just don't feel discouraged. And that's why podcasts like these are so vital in our community, and different media outlets are so vital, because it serves as a support in that interim. It's not a replacement for therapy, but it serves as, a solace and a comfort and a support in the time where you can just feel like there's someone that understands what I'm going through. And there's a story that I can listen to that it sounds like mine, and it helps me feel better to know that they made me through, and so I can too.
And another place I always talk about it on the podcast all the time, I talk about the National Alliance on Mental Illness. I've had my personal experience before I even became a member of a chapter in Maryland. They have their connection support group. They also have like their peer-to-peer support, their classes where the facilitators are people who currently live with mental illness, and they go through training before even being able to teach this peer course. And I found those to be one of the most beneficial experiences for me, because I was able to connect with someone who also battled with the mental illness, but yet they were teaching and talking about recovery and what it was like for them. And it does provide you with what a sense of hope. So even if someone is like, I can't get in to see a therapist right away, you can check out your local NAMI chapter and see what support groups they offer. That's also a way of getting support. There's also Facebook groups who offer peer support. Again, they're not replacements for relationship with a mental health professional, but they can help you in the interim. And if push comes to shove and you really feel like you're in a crisis and you are going to harm yourself, the best thing to do is just go to the hospital.
Yeah, just call 911, go to the hospital, to the emergency room, and they'll get you set up with someone right away. So yeah, I agree with all of those outlets.
Absolutely. And I actually wanted to just talk a bit about the image of the strong Black woman and how that is now considered the new face of depression. Can you help me talk about that?
It's so frustrating that, in media, especially on TV, in a lot of Black films, Black women are always perceived to be either like the Medeas of the family. They have to be the matriarch of the family, and they have to hold the burden of everyone's problems and still put a smile on their face. Or, like the Gabrielle Unions of every film, where she's kind of this angry Black woman, but she's strong and has to keep it together for her image. And to me, it's just so frustrating. And I still have friends today who are like, going through different issues and are saying, but I'm strong and I'll figure it out. It's like, girl, you don't have to be strong. It's okay to cry. It's okay to feel. It's okay to, just be in your emotions. And, this image is just so mind-boggling to me because, not to bring up too much race relations, but you always see the white mother going to therapy, or, she's on medication or antidepressants. And sometimes that can be seen in a negative connotation, but at least she's getting help, you know? You don't see that too much in the media with Black films and with Black publicity. You don't see a lot of Black women who are in the therapist's office. And it's frustrating. But I think with this new era and this new generation, I think they're becoming a lot more open about mental health. I mean, for example, Insecure, when, Issa Rae suggested that Molly get therapy and she kind of scoffed it off, but then she ended up going and she ended up enjoying it. And it was just kind of like that turning point in her life where it's like, or even in media where it's like Black women do get therapy. Black women can see therapists who look like them and who understand their plight and who understand the historical struggles of what they went through and how this affects them today. Like, all of that is possible. So I completely agree with you in saying that the strong Black woman has kind of been the face of depression. But I do think that that's changing as people are becoming more insightful to mental illness. And, they're kind of changing the narrative of that, which I'm very proud of.
Absolutely. Shout out to millennials because that's us. We're doing a great job with that. We truly are. Like, just like you said, Insecure. There's also another show that I interviewed one of the cast members on the podcast on a previous episode, Vanessa Batten Kelly, who plays a character in Giants who battles bipolar disorder. And the show was on Issa Rae's YouTube channel. And I thought that it's so crucial to see these images. Or when we watched Nola Darling and She's Gotta Have It on Netflix, when she was assaulted and she started going to therapy. And so I'm glad, I'm so thankful that the narrative is changing and that we are actually the ones that we're like driving that. And I'm to just be a part of the generation that is doing that. Is so impactful because now future generations will not have to carry that burden. And it will be like, get to the point where it's just like talking about the birds and the bees. We're going to talk about mental health and suicide prevention because it's that important for us to have these
Absolutely.
conversations.
We do an annual physical for school every year. We need to do an annual mental health check-in as well. I mean, just like standard off the top. It could be more frequently than that, but it needs to be part of our regular healthcare routine, I think.
Absolutely. It should be. I could not agree more. Everyone knows that, I have my standing appointment weekly with Dr. Tucker. And yeah, like I love my therapist and I will stay in therapy as long as I need to. I have made great progress, tremendous amount of progress. When people expect that you're supposed to go to one session and be like, oh, I'm fixed. And I tell people all the time, I remember writing a tweet and saying like therapy doesn't work unless you do, and you cannot expect to go to one session and be fixed. Like that trauma that's been sitting there, or anything that has been festering, you're not going to fix that in one session. You're just not. It takes time to, you know, realize your thought patterns and your behaviors and see how things are linked to your childhood, you know, but being consistent is key. A lot of therapists say that people will come to one session. They'll be like, okay, so how long do I got to be here? Is it like 6 months or like, what do I need to do? Mm-hmm. And I was talking to a therapist and she was like, but I was interviewing her and she was saying like, I can't tell you how long you need to be here, but I, you know, what I can tell you is that you can be here as long as you need to be here, because you have to put the work in and not just being self-aware, but then actually implementing the coping strategies, you know, and that has been crucial for me because I'm so self-aware now because of therapy. I'm so intentional, like about who I surround myself with, like who I allow in my circle, where I give my energy to. And I'm so grateful, even with boundaries. Yes, I can do it. No, I can't do it. And so therapy has been a vital part in, I would say, the rediscovery or the recreation of myself.
That is amazing. And I completely agree. Like, therapy doesn't work unless you do. Like you said, there is no time frame on it. And what's so frustrating is, like, you have to keep telling someone you can't undo years of trauma and years of emotional turmoil in one day. It does not work like that.
Right.
It doesn't work. If you're in the gym and you're trying to lose weight, you're not going to go to one gym session and have a six pack. You know, it takes time. It takes dedication. It takes changing your whole lifestyle, you know, and making these adjustments and being very intentional, like you said, to implementing different things into your life so that you are making more conscious and healthier changes for your mind. So yeah, absolutely.
And how do you currently manage your mental health?
So I have really been into the gym lately. I have focused on my fitness goals because I found that my depression had led me to gain so much weight. And in turn, my weight affected my depression. So it was just kind of like these two rams just butting heads. Like, so I really started focusing on the gym and I was really intentional about really immersing myself in self-care. So it's kind of why I took a little bit of time off from the NOR, because I felt like I can't fully immerse myself in helping others if I'm not helping myself first. So I got a trainer, I got a gym membership, I was, you know, doing different things to make sure that my physical health was my priority and still engaging in my mental health. So meditating, journaling, setting very intentional goals for myself, and still doing things that I felt like were fulfilling for me. So traveling and just being around friends and being around family and people that make me happy and people that didn't make me feel happy, people that I felt like were toxic, I immediately cut them out. And I think that in total was like a really good self-care plan for myself that I created. So I'm just maintaining that and, you know, doing therapy groups every now and then. I feel like I'm at a point where I know myself enough to know my coping skills and to know my coping strategies. So it's good every now and then to have someone that I can kind of dump onto and vent to. But I think I have a really good rotation of my coping skills and my self-care strategies right now. So I feel like I'm in such a better place and I'm so much happier than I was, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And I honestly never thought I would be in a place like this. When I was 15, I didn't think I would see until 21. So to be here now and to be happy is, you know, really exciting.
Yeah, I can totally relate, especially when I was in my depression. I didn't think I was going to make it to 2018. Podcast was not even on my mind. I barely thought I would make it past the next 5 minutes. So I'm really happy to hear, you know, that you're doing much better. And the good thing about that is that when we're in a better place mentally, then our dreams can flourish. Then we're open to receive so many blessings and opportunities because we took the time to work on ourselves. There are so many people who are extremely successful and rich, and they are unhappy. They're so unhappy. Mm-hmm. You know, when you think about people, they'll say like, why is that celebrity? Why would they kill themselves? Or they have all this money. And that goes to really show you, as cliche as it sounds, you know, money does not make you happy. Material things does not make you happy. We think by having all of these things, they fill voids for a moment, but that void will never go away if it's not addressed. So I'm very excited to hear that you're doing much better. And do you have any upcoming events with Nia Nior?
So we do. We are doing a relaunch. Like I said, we took some time off to kind of refocus, rebrand, and kind of restructure. So we're having a relaunch party probably in the next few weeks to a month. If you stay posted on my social media, which is at Nia Noire, that's NIANOIRE, and my website, nianoir.com. You know, you can stay up to date with all of our whereabouts, all of our events, and all of our happenings. And we should be having our relaunch party very soon.
So for this week's therapist shout out, it goes to Hearts and Mind Counseling. And I'm so excited about this therapist shout out because it's a Black man. I realize that I've been doing a lot of shout outs to female therapists of color. So we got to give our brother some love too. So the practice is owned by Paul B. Williams, and he is a seasoned licensed clinical social worker and psychotherapist. And he is based in the DC, Maryland, Virginia area. And he focuses on clients who struggle with depression, anxiety, love addiction, anger, blended family dynamics, separation and divorce. And he also specializes in working with children, which I thought was really cool. And so I want to give a shout out to Mr. Williams. I will be sure to leave his information in the show notes. The name of his practice is Hearts and Mind Counseling. And again, he is based in the DC, Maryland, Virginia area. You guys, so for this week, mind, body, and soulness segment, it's not even that deep. I have two questions for you, two things that I actually want you to do, I should say. One is, what is one thing, or think about one thing that you're going to do to dismantle the mental health stigma, whether that is a Facebook status, whether that is going to a support group, whether that's reading articles. What is one thing that you're going to do to dismantle the mental health stigma? Think about that. And I really want to know, you guys. So send me an email and let me know. That's podcast@fireflyesunite.com. And then the other one is, for in honor of Mental Health Awareness Month, what is one thing that you're going to make a conscious effort to do as it pertains to self-care? And we're going to have an episode where we actually dive into all about self-care, because I think a lot of people don't really understand what self-care really is. It's just a buzzword and it's like a hot topic now. So by self-care, I mean, what is one thing that you're going to do to maintain your mental health, your emotional, mental, and spiritual health? What's that thing you're going to do? Whether it's, are you going to be consistent with therapy? Or are you going to find a therapist? You've been looking for a therapist for a very long time. Are you going to journal? Are you going to make an effort to leave work early so you can spend more time with your kids? Or are you going to make sure that you go to the gym because it helps you to release stress? Are you going to meditate? Like, anything that can impact your mental health, what is one thing that you're going to make a conscious effort that you can implement this month and carry out for the rest of your life? You can maybe make tweaks here and there, but in honor of Mental Health Awareness Month, the only thing that I'm asking for you to do for this Mind, Body, and Soulness segment is to think of one way that you will dismantle the mental health stigma, and think of one way that you will take control of your mental health. One thing that you're going to do as it pertains to self-care. All right, you guys. So that wraps up another episode of the Fireflies Unite podcast. I hope that this interview that I had with Jessica that you learned something new and that you took something away from it that will help you better manage your mental health or help a loved one who's experiencing mental health challenges. I have a few announcements before we wrap up the episode officially, but I am looking to build a team of 10 to 15 people for the NAMI walk that's happening in Baltimore. So if you listen to the podcast and you're in the DC, Maryland, Virginia area, my goal is to get 10 to 15 people for the walk. I think I have 4 or 5 people now. So even if I just get 5 more people, I'm really excited about the walk, of course. It's something that's really important to me. And so if you're in the area and you're interested in joining the Fireflies Unite team for the NAMI walk to raise awareness for mental health, as well as raise donate. You can donate if you're not in the area. Donate whatever amount you want, $5, $10, $1, whatever you want to do. But I really want to get more people a part of the team. And so again, if you're in the area, I'll be sure to leave the link in the show notes. So if you want to join the Fireflies Unite team, you can do that. So that's one. The other announcement that I want to talk about is the mental health campaign that I'm participating in. So shout out to Dr. Janae Taylor. She and I created a Black mental health campaign that consists of 16 Black podcasts that talk about mental health. And so on Twitter and Instagram, every single Monday for the rest of the month of May for Mental Health Awareness Month, we will be sharing episodes from other Black mental health podcasters. A lot of the podcasts that are on the list, they happen to be from the perspective of mental health professionals. So I think it's really great that if you listen to my podcast every week, y'all know I always say I'm not a mental health professional, but I will point you in the right direction to get resources that you need. That's why I always bring mental health professionals on the podcast to help to get that different perspective and to get you with the things that you need. And so this campaign that we're working on is really to highlight the Black Mental Health Podcast. And we came together. We'll be sharing each other podcasts on Instagram and Twitter every single Monday. People who are not podcasters, they'll be sharing their resources, whether that's articles, whether that's worksheets, journals, whatever that is, anything that can help you better manage your mental health. And so Dr. Taylor and I are really super excited about this campaign because we're really not only raising awareness for mental health, but we're cross-promoting the Black Mental Health Podcast and really coming together to show that Black people are talking about mental health. Yes, it's still bad taboo. Yes, there's still a stigma associated, but there are people out here working really hard to dismantle that. And so we're super excited. We have probably about like 60 people who are part of the campaign between podcasters, mental health speakers, mental health advocates, therapists, and social workers. So this is really, really awesome. If you're not on Twitter, I need you to get on Twitter so you can join us in this conversation on Twitter, also on Instagram, but a bulk of it will be happening on Twitter. But like I said, we will be on Instagram as well. And so the hashtag that we're using is #BlackMH, M as in Mary, H as in Hector, but that stands for mental health. So #BlackMH. And the other one is mental health. Let me make sure I have it right, y'all, because I do not want to get it wrong. The other hashtag we are using is #MHMonday. So that is hashtag again, MH stands for mental health and Monday. So really join us and help us celebrate mental health awareness just by live tweeting these Black mental health podcasts. Like I said, every night we have some amazing podcast. We have Therapy for Black Girls by Dr. Joy, who's doing exceptional work. We have Minding My Black Business podcast with Dr. Taylor, the one we actually created this campaign. And I was on her podcast and she was on my podcast. We have A Different Perspective podcast by Dr. Amber Thornton. We also have The Evolving Chair. We have Talking Off the Couch. We have The Honeybee podcast. We have Between Sessions Podcast. We have the Purpose University Project of we have the Purpose University Project Podcast. We also have the Mindful Rebel Podcast. We have a Date with Darkness Podcast. Y'all, we just out here and it's just awesome. And so make sure y'all check these podcasts out. I'll be sure to, this information will be also shared on social media, so you can have that. And if you engage in the conversation, you'll be able to listen to other great mental health podcasts. So I'm super excited about that. And so, as always, y'all know I'm sending y'all positive vibes. Many blessings. Have a fabulous week. And I look forward to talking to you all next week. Bye, you guys. I hope that you obtain tools and resources from the Fireflies Unite podcast to help you manage your mental health. But please do not use it as a substitute for a relationship with a licensed therapist or psychiatrist. Let's continue the conversation by following me on Fireflies Pod on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.